Welcome to We Make Children's Books, the podcast that takes you through the imaginative minds of children's book authors and artists. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and in today's episode, we are excited to have with us the internationally recognized and award-winning illustrator, Anousha Syed. So, Anousha, thank you for joining us, and I'm excited. As before we went on the air, I was telling you that I've been an avid fan of your YouTube channel. The scores and scores of children's books that you've illustrated over the years. Thank you for taking the time out to join us tonight.
Yeah, of course. I'm super excited to be on.
Before we jump into going into the heart of the interview, do you want to kind of give people a bit of a background of how you got into children's book illustration? And we'll roll out with some of the questions.
My name is Anousha Syed. I am a freelance illustrator and a character designer for animation. I am Pakistani Canadian, based out of Toronto. And let's see. So I've been working full-time as a freelancer for the past 5 years now. I did my bachelor's in illustration and fine arts at a teeny tiny school in Switzerland called Ceruleum Ecole d'Art Visuel. And I graduated from there 2015. Since then, I have been illustrating picture books, book covers, editorial illustrations, and whatnot. I have illustrated over 20 picture books, some including Bilal Kukzal is one which a lot of people know of, I'm Perfectly Designed, which was written by Queer Eye's Karamo Brown. I have also, as a character designer, I do a lot of freelance work with studios including Disney and Netflix, and have worked with clients like Google as well. The way that I kind of got into children's books was that originally I wanted to go to school for animation. While I was in school, I realized that it wasn't really right for me. I don't have the patience for it. And so I ended up in the illustration route instead. But I'm glad that I still am able to work kind of in the animation industry as a development artist, basically helping to figure out what the style of a show could look like.
How much of a deliberate change did you make where it kind of evolved into doing that full time and where you realized you could easily make a living on just doing that?
It was that I had always wanted to work in animation. And then when I was in school, I realized that I didn't want to animate specifically, but I still wanted to work with like the big studios. You know, I always wanted to work, you know, move down to LA and work with like Disney and Pixar. And so that was always my really big goal. And then I had applied constantly. I don't know how many times I got rejected. And then I was kind of just doing picture books on the side as like, I think I'm good at this. I'm making money off of this. I'll just do this on the side, but I wouldn't fully commit to it because I still really want to keep applying to all of these animation studios because I thought that that was my dream. And so I did this for about like 3 years. And then eventually I had like this moment. It was like the summer of 2018 where I kind of realized that, wait, this is still my dream. Like, why am I still doing this? Is this like just part of like this childhood fixation that I have on animation? Because I kind of realized that I don't like working 9 to 5, which is what I'd have to do at a full-time job. I like working in my own style, which if I was working at an animation studio, you mostly would have to work in other people's style. I like being my own boss, which again, I wouldn't be able to do at a 9 to 5 job. I like the flexibility of working from home. I like the flexibility of choosing the work that I want to do. So it didn't really, and like also the style that I work in is not really suited for animation. And so after doing all of these pros and cons, I kind of realized that animation isn't really for me. And I actually really like illustrating. And so I decided that summer, like, you know what, forget it. I'm not friends with the animation industry anymore. I'm just going to commit full time to illustration. And that ended up working out really well for me because I wasn't having like that one foot in the door of animation of just hoping like, okay, maybe I'm just going to keep my options open. Because I kept having that mentality of like, okay, I'm not going to take on this picture book because what if I get that offer from a studio? I don't want to have to like, I'll be so overworked, you know, I can't do both. So I'm not going to take these extra gigs. And so because I didn't have that foot in the door just waiting for them, I was able to fully commit to illustration, take on all the jobs that I was able to, really work on myself. And then that's when I felt that my illustration career could actually bloom, which it has since then.
And please, anybody, check out her YouTube channel. It's fantastic. Where
you
give lots of great advice. And one of them is, and I loved how you said this, is make sure you you don't burn yourself out, like making sure that you do enough to make this as a living, but don't give yourself too much work where you're all of a sudden you lose your passion. What would be some of your advice for folks on how to balance to do enough to do, being a full-time freelance artist, to do enough to make a living off of it, but also balance it enough to make sure that you still sleep and have a life?
So up until recently, I always, like you mentioned, I always had like a big problem of saying no to clients because I felt like, one, that I wanted to work on everything. It all sounded really great. And also I was worried that like, okay, if I say no to them, then like, I'm not going to have this shot again. And so I felt the need to like take on everything. And obviously that ended up meaning that I would be overworked, stressed out, horrible time management, just like working into the night and weekends. And so it's tough, but you kind of have to realize that your health comes first, because this is the only body you're going to get. If you're going to be working endlessly, you're going to end up with carpal tunnel syndrome. You're going to ruin your eyes and whatnot. So yeah, like try to take on the stuff that you're really passionate about. And then if you have to reject things that you still really want to work on, just let them know, like, hey, I don't have the availability right now. Just keep me in mind for future projects. And usually they will come back to you. Or if you have like a lull in your work schedule, you can email them and be like, hey, I have some availability now. What's up? So that's if you are getting a lot of work. And if you are feeling that like you want to take on a lot of work to like make up for, to so that you have like you're earning enough, then the other thing that I would also suggest is like, it might also be that you're not charging enough for your work. If you're at that point where you're getting so much work that you have the ability to reject things, that probably means that like it's like supply and demand, right? You're having a lot of demand, and so you need to increase your rates to reflect that. And so if you're increasing your rates, that ends up meaning that you can, you know, reject projects and you are pricing yourself fairly.
Yeah, as an example too, is one of your videos that, you know, definitely people check it out. You talk about rate setting. Okay. And I love what you did on there is like, and it's people are like, well, how much? How much? And like, you know, like people say, well, how much should I charge? And your answer, you know, and the video says, pick your annual salary, what you think you want to make, and then you got to figure out your cost of living where you live, because if
yeah, it's different,
you
know, for everyone.
It's different for everyone. And then he also it gives people that sense of value as well to say this is what that rating is. And as you're saying in that video too, it's like, this is the minimum, this is your bottom you should be charging. You can always charge more, but this is the bottom. If you want to live off of, you know, X amount of dollars, you know, a salary a year, this is what you should be aiming for. Do you ever have that ability to say, I'm not super excited about this, but I have an opening? Or do you try to make sure you find projects that really excite you and really make you excited to want to illustrate those?
At this point in my career, since I have been doing this for like 5-6 years now, I have, I'm thankful that I have that power to be able to say no to a lot of projects, because like I have worked up to the point where there is like a certain salary, there's a certain fee that I am looking for, and there are a lot of projects which unfortunately that is out of their budget. And so there are moments where I can be like, okay, this is a project that is really exciting. Like I want to do it for the passion of, it's fine that I have to lower my rate a little bit for it. Right. But for the most part, I know what I'm worth. And so to those projects, I say, sorry.
Do you feel comfortable going into like the publisher or the author to say, hey, have you thought about, I would prefer if I could rate it like this.
Final say is obviously is always going to be for the publisher, but I do have some power that is written into the contract so that I can be like, hey, you know what? I don't like where this is going. I do have a little bit of power in that, which is great.
What would be your advice for artists and freelance artists on things that you've seen that worked really well for you on how to manage your day and how to manage your space?
Right. So I have always hated working from home. I feel like I can never get any work done. There are just too many distractions at play, not just even like things like TV and video games, but even just like you have to get some groceries done, you know? And like normally if you had a 9-to-5 job, you get it done like afterwards, like your work comes first and then that. But like if you're working from home, it's like, oh, I guess it's 10 o'clock. I guess I can go out for a little bit. And that what you think is a 5-minute run ends up being an hour, which cuts into your working time and whatnot. And then I always felt like I didn't have those boundaries of working at a certain time. I'd find myself working from like 9 to like 2 o'clock in the morning, but in like 30-minute intervals with lots of breaks in between. So it was a horrible system. And I kind of realized 4 years into it that, like, you know, I should just go to a co-working studio, which was great. I did that for 9 months and then the pandemic happened. Yeah. And so now that I'm back to working at home, but a couple of things that I figured out is that, one, for me personally, always change into your work clothes, even if it's just another pair of clean pajamas or sweatpants, just having that mentality of like, okay, I'm going to work, I'm getting dressed up, makes you feel more in the zone. Have like a dedicated area, which feels like, yeah, I'm going to work, this is a separate place. And then, yeah, having like that fixed time of like, I'm going to work from 9 to 5. And after that, no emails, no work. You want something out of me, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Right. And just having those boundaries, I think, was really important.
Right. How many projects are you working on consecutively?
So I usually have 3 or 4 projects going on at any given time.
Okay.
And that can be a combination of picture books and animation freelance work, and then maybe like a weird, like an editorial illustration or something random mixed in. But these are not happening simultaneously. It's usually that like I'll have maybe 2 that are happening that I have to work on right now, and everything else is in that stage of either contract negotiation or waiting for feedback or something else where like I'm really only working on 2 things at a given time.
Right.
Sometimes though, they all magically align. So I'm working on all of them at once, which is very rare. But when that happens, it sucks.
How does that are you the kind of person who like write their to-do list the night before?
I am not a very organized person naturally. My natural state is just chaos. Like if I don't have a system in place, I'm not like a neat person or organized person. But like I find that having structure really helps. I just have to force myself to do it. So what I do now is that I kind of divide 80 illustrations by 28 days. And I figure out like, okay, I need to draw 3 a day if I want to keep up my schedule. And then I try to just make sure I get 3 done every day. So that's like one system that I have. The other thing is just whatever is the highest priority. So I've got like 3 projects going on right now, but I have 1 thing that's due tomorrow. So that's going to go high up in priority. And then the other things can just like, whatever, I'll get to them eventually. And it just like keeps shifting around whatever is most important that day.
When you go to art school, they don't teach you how to run a business. Nope. They teach you how to do art. How important was to advocate to make sure that there are business classes that art schools kind of have to mandate in curriculums?
100%. I don't think there's any question about it. School, besides like the drawing classes, there should absolutely be the business of illustration, taxes, just organization, how to find work. That's the other thing, which I don't think schools really cover, of like, you know, how to set up your portfolio, how to cold contact art directors, how to manage social media, because that's all like marketing yourself is just like so much more important now. And like, there are a lot of avenues for doing that on social media, which is how like 90% of the work I've gotten through marketing myself on social media. But a lot of people don't have those skills. It's a learned skill. And it is like another job, because it does take a lot of like work and manpower. And like, I do have a large following on my social media, but it's mostly because I put that work into it, right, which I have done over the course of like 7 years, which should be a thing that is taught in schools, but sadly it's not. And it is a very important skill for an artist.
So would your advice be, if you're doing freelance, you have to either go to a local community college or take classes online, how to learn how to run a business?
Yeah. So like, I mean, you could do it on your own. Like you don't necessarily need to do these things, but like, right, I thought like these were areas of skill that I was seriously lacking in that I had no idea how to do. And so I actively, because my school never taught them, I actively tried to seek out places where I could learn it. So I took I tried to find workshops around the city that taught business, both specifically for artists and just like general for small business owners and things like that. There are courses online, and then obviously there's YouTube, which was why I started my YouTube channel, because I thought that there was a lack of kind of like this business management kind of stuff specifically for illustrators. And so I wanted to share what I learned over the past few years through what I had to learn through trial and error. I wanted to give it on a platter so you guys wouldn't have to do what I did.
Your own personal projects and your own personal work, do you use that as kind of like a warm up before you jump in for the day, or do you use that as a wind down at the end of the day when you've done work?
I'm in a tricky situation these days where really for like the past year or so, maybe 2 years, I've barely been creating any personal work. I have kind of developed like a love-hate relationship to art, which is why a lot of people tell you like, keep your hobbies, like if you make your hobbies your career, you're going to end up hating it, which I have learned very strongly. So like I work all day just like drawing and drawing and drawing. Like before when I was younger, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to draw all day for work. And then like after I'm done drawing for work, I'm going to draw for fun. I don't know how I had that stamina, because now like after drawing all day, I don't want to touch a pencil. I'm done. I'm off the clock. I'm just going to watch some TV.
Right.
So because of these past 2 years, I stopped doing personal work. I was just like, I'm going to work on client stuff and then I'm going to just chillax. But that also meant that like I kind of lost that passion for art, and I kind of lost, I wasn't really growing either, because I feel like personal art is really where you end up experimenting and growing and kind of figuring out what you like. So towards the end of last year was when I was like, okay, you know what? I have to get back into personal work. So I bought a sketchbook. And so once in a while, I'll try to do a warm up, just something quick and with the intention of not really showing anyone, because that was also my concern of like, if I have to draw something, I'm going to post it immediately. And then I can't really, I would end up catering my work for viewers, if that makes sense. Not really for myself, but for what would get me views, what would get me likes, which kind of scales it down a little bit.
And is that where you kind of start seeing yourself doing more other types of creative pieces, like
you're
knitting and you're video editing and stuff?
That's exactly right. Because like, again, like I'm so done. The other thing, like I'm very much a digital artist, but I want to say that like digital art is as valid of an art as, you know, just drawing with pencils and paint. But at the same time, you don't have a finished product that you can hold. And there is something about drawing traditionally, which does feel different. And that is something I miss. And so that's why I wanted to draw more traditionally for my personal work. And then also to get out of the world of 2D and into 3D. And so since COVID started, I wanted to learn different crafts. So I picked up like, that's why I started making like clay earrings. I wanted to experiment with that. I wanted to learn knitting. I tried tie-dye for a hot second. That didn't really go anywhere. But yeah, just like these other creative avenues in the hopes that like, oh, maybe I'll find something else that I might be really good at or something that I might even enjoy.
Right. Anybody that follows your work, have you ever tried to like, is there anything specifically for your fans, any Easter eggs that you try to hide in any illustrations at all?
Let me think. I wouldn't call these Easter eggs, but like when I'm working on my picture books, usually at the start of any picture book, there is a character design phase where I basically am taking the main characters and I'm doing like a bunch of different versions of them for the author and the art director to try to figure out what is this kid going to look like.
Right.
And so a lot of the time, so like maybe I'll do 5 or 6 of them and one gets chosen.
Right.
The other designs, I still like them. And so they often end up I end up reusing them either as background characters later on in my other books or even as main characters. And so you might end up finding like in one of my books, a reject from a previous book and you have no idea.
Yeah, like, yeah, for example, it's almost thinking about like actors in different films. They're playing different characters, but it's like the same. Like, for instance, like Rise Up and Write just came out a couple years ago. Like, any of those characters would be in the background or in like in Bilal Cook's doll or anything like that? Or
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that like one of the there's like a background character in Rise Up and Write It who was a rejected design from I Am Perfectly Designed.
That's awesome. Yeah. and you mentioned too, like before, that you work mostly. So you work mostly in Procreate now, correct?
Yeah, 100% on Procreate these days.
And do you have you ever, you know, when you're trying to design, you're doing working on some designs, do you kind of give yourself the freedom to, even though it's a job, and then especially in doing those initial designs to send off to the publisher or the artist to say, I tried out a different style, or do you try to like try something new with like, you know, maybe a different, a different brush setting or a different, you know, color palette or anything like that? Yeah.
So I have a very commercial looking style for my picture books, but it's not intentional because every time I have the character design phase, I'm like, hey, what if we try something weird? Okay. What if we go for this really stylized look? I'll do it every single time in all of my books. I'll suggest it.
Right.
And they never like it. They're just like, no, let's keep it cute. Let's keep it like commercial. Right. And so I'm hoping like one of these days they'll bite, but we'll see. Right.
And do you feel comfortable in the children's book niche? Have you tried doing looking at other things like graphic novels or anything larger than that?
I have looked into graphic novels, and it is something that I do want to branch out into one day. I have started little bits and pieces where I did a teeny tiny comic for like an anthology for Adventure Time a couple of years ago. That was like my first foray into it. I did most recently, and this is coming out, there is a book series called Last Kids on Earth. It's pretty really popular like chapter book series. And so they have where they do like a short little comic. And so I was approached for it and I was like, okay, this is great. It is like a 12-page graphic novel, basically. It's like a teeny tiny graphic novel. And so I was hoping that this could be like my training wheels for me to figure out, okay, how do graphic novels work? What kind of like structure should I have? Because it is a lot of work, because you're with picture books, you have a 32-page book, which you would think is a lot of work. But when you're working on a graphic novel, each page has like a bunch of mini illustrations in it. And so, well, a lot of graphic novelists, what a lot of cartoonists tell me is that you can't be as detailed and as precious with graphic novels as you can with picture books. I would love every frame of a graphic novel to be a beautiful work of art, but that's not sustainable. You can't do that. And so you have to allow yourself to be more, a little simpler, a little messier, if you want to be able to get that work done. And so that was something I had to learn. And so that's why like I took that project on. There's another project that I'm working on, which is also like a mini training wheels graphic novel project. And I'm just doing like these little things so that hopefully one day I can work on a full book.
Right. And what's your impression? What's your feeling towards difference between signing a contract for a book series as compared to a one-off children's books?
I've worked on three different book series. One is Monster and Boy, which was a chapter book. One was Hank the Pet Sitter, which was like a picture book series. And Daring Dreamers Club, which was also a chapter book. So when you're working with chapter books, you're less favored as opposed to the author, because the author, because it's a chapter book, more words, author is going to be getting more, you know, more payment, more royalties and all of that. And so that's going to be reflected in the contracts. Sometimes you won't have a royalty either, which sucks. Other thing with contract is that if you're working on a series, it is a longer schedule. And so you are going to be stuck on that for a while, which is why like I kind of have a rule that I don't really do series. I worked on Hank the Pet Sitter, which is an 8-book series. Never again. It took up all of my time. And I felt like after the third book, I felt like I had outgrown it in terms of both like the kind of subject matter and the publisher and the salary. And I was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I think I can do better, but I can't. I still got like 5 books left. So yeah, that's one thing. And then you also have to keep in mind payment schedule, because you are working on a series. If you're able to negotiate for a payment structure where you're not just like getting paid at the end of every book, but you're kind of have it spread out that like maybe you get a percentage on the beginning of the book when you're first signing the contracts, plus maybe a section on after you submitted sketches, and then one at the end of every book. Then you have like some payment that's like always coming in evenly rather than like a huge lump at the very end, which like, what am I going to do for the few months before then? Right.
Right. So getting back to what you do, where you work with Procreate.
I was doing a lot of traveling, and so I needed something that was a bit more portable. And so I was like, oh, Procreate looks kind of cool. Let's try this out. But I would mostly use Procreate as like for sketching, because it felt more natural, like using a sketchbook, and then do my final artwork on Photoshop and my Cintiq.
Right.
Eventually, as Procreate's capabilities got better and better, they were able to support CMYK. They were able to support like larger and larger file sizes and dimensions. Eventually, I was like, wait, Procreate's great. I'm just going to work on that entirely. And so for the past 2 years, I've been doing all of my work on Procreate, like entire picture books, everything. It's really great. If I'm working all day at a desk, I still have the option where, like, if I want to mix things up, I can work out in the backyard if it's a beautiful day. If I am working and then I see that my sisters, my husband, they're watching TV, I can be like, oh, I can take a little break. I can work and watch with them. So I do, like, I love the portability. I can keep that boundary of working at my desk when I need to and then taking breaks.
How long did it take you to get the right brush set and get the right color set? How long did you feel as though, you know, working in Procreate to say, this is it, this is my style? And do you have different palettes and different brush sets for different books, or are you pretty much sticking to that?
So that the other reason why it took me so long to, because I did like sketching on Procreate for the first few while, but I always stayed on Procreate for final art. And one of the reasons was that on Photoshop, you have Kyle Webster's Photoshop brushes, absolutely amazing. And then I couldn't find anything that replicated that on Procreate, which is why I avoided it for so long. Eventually, I did find some brushes that I really liked, namely the 6B default pencil brush. Like, I use it for literally everything. That is my absolute favorite brush now. And then I ended up finding, as like Procreate's capabilities got better and better, there were some brushes that were able to replicate that, because I have a very traditional kind of look that I try to recreate with my art. So I think like Max Olickney, I think that's his name. He creates a lot of great traditional looking brushes, which I love using. So I use those a lot. As for color palettes, for brushes. Generally I use a 6B pencil brush for most of my books. For Monster and Boy specifically, I do use that for like the line art and everything to get that specific look. Like that's like the main brush I use. For other books, I'll use like a variety of different ones. But for Monster and Boy, 100%, it's just the 6B pencil. And for color palette, I usually just do my own thing. But I do have like a fixed palette that I'll use for certain illustrations, which are just like my default. I like these colors. I like this particular shade of yellow. I like this particular shade of green and blue and whatnot. And I have that palette saved so that if I don't want to really think about, because I try to be adventurous with my colors, but if I don't really want to think, then I'll just pick and choose from that palette.
Okay. You basically, you know, talking to other artists, you kind of speak the same language, but when you're talking to people that are outside that, do they ever say, how come this looks different? Or do they know that you tried a different brush style on that? Or
I do get that sometimes where like, like when I'm doing like that initial character design stage or like that rough work, I'll send it over, especially like when I'm doing my interior sketches. They're really ugly. Like, I'm sure there are some examples on my website, but like they're extremely rough because they don't need to be clean at this stage.
Right.
But some art directors will be like, this looks off, you know, like why are his arms like not the same size? Like why does he look like this? I'm like, okay, no, like, I know it looks like this now, but it's not going to in the final. Okay, like don't worry about it.
when you look at some of your previous stuff, what are some of the things that you've been most proud of in your over the last few years? That anything specifically about your styles or anything that you would say that you've been extremely proud of discovering on as you've been working?
I think like if you scroll down a little bit, there is one piece that I'm super, this like the whale piece, like I am still super proud of this piece. So with that one, I'm really happy with like the color choices that I took for it. It's not like a palette that I had ever done before. So that was something that I was really happy about. Other things that like I am really glad that I picked up on would be that I wish that I had started, if you look at my like really early portfolio from like when I first started, all of my characters are pretty much just like standing straight, looking forward, and they're all very cookie cutter cute, you know, and they all look pretty similar to each other. And then eventually I kind of realized that, you know, like that's not what people look like. I mean, it's cute and all, but
right.
I think people value more when they look at characters, when they see something that reminds them of real life, where they can look at a character and be like, oh, I totally know this kid. Like I went to high school with this kid, or that you see something in yourself in them. And that could be like little quirks in like, maybe their teeth are kind of wonky, or maybe like their clothes don't fit just right. Like things, little details like that, that give your drawings a little bit more life and humanity, which I didn't really have at the very beginning when I first started drawing. I was very focused on like making them look very perfect when, you know, we're not perfect. So that was one thing that I definitely have learned to add on into my work over the years.
And do you see yourself as, you know, mainly doing children's books, a sense of duty to make sure that the artwork is accessible to the audience?
I feel like, especially with like children's books, maybe less so with like the chapter books and stuff, because you're getting to a larger, bigger age group. But with picture books, I always tell like in my YouTube videos that like kids aren't really reading. They're at that age where like maybe some of them are, but for the most part, they're really just like looking at the pictures, which is what I did. I love reading as a kid, but it was mostly just looking at the pictures and making up my own stories for them. And so that's why I feel like illustration has such a big part in it, and you want to try to make sure that your art is as like friendly but also tells as much story as possible in them. And so in the ways that I try to make it accessible for the kids is that I try to make sure that like if a kid is reading it, even without the text, you instantly know what is going on, and even a little bit more than the text. I talk about this in one of my videos where I explain my picture book process, where if you have a page which is just like, you know, Billy is cooking pancakes for breakfast. That's just like, that's the only thing that's written on the page. In the illustration, you can go so much deeper in that into telling a whole story. You know, it's like, is he cooking pancakes in the middle of the night when he's not supposed to, and it's like the entire kitchen a big mess? Or is he cooking pancakes for his mom for like Mother's Day or something? And you have mom sitting at the table with a blindfold on her or something. So there are all of these extra details you can add in for the kids where, as I've also mentioned in my videos, authors have a 500 word limit usually for picture books, which is not a lot of words.
Right.
So they have to be really limited in how much they can write down. So it's up to the illustrator to fill in that story for them.
And how much near the beginning of your career did you get pushback, or how much did they say, take this out, that you see with presenting it to the publisher and the author as well?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of pushback towards the beginning if I wanted to add something in or go outside of my style, especially because like some of the projects that I worked on at the very beginning, things like very first picture books I worked on, one was called Busy Noisy School, another one was called Little Witches Zoom and Broom, and then Hank the Pet Sitter. They were extremely strict in what I could draw, where they either wrote down exactly like you in this spot, this is happening. And in the case of the picture books, Busy Noisy School, the art director straight up drew out in a rough sketch, hey, this is what you're supposed to draw. So it was great because it was my first project. So that was kind of like training wheels for me to figure out like, oh, okay, this is exactly what I have to draw. But eventually I was like, hey, I need a little bit more creative freedom. Whereas now what the art director does is like, they'll give me the text, and sometimes it's extremely vague on like what's going on. And then they'll give me no description of what goes on the page. They're just like, here's your text, just do whatever you want. Wow. And so I appreciate that creative freedom more now. And I have that ability to be like more, try something new. And like sometimes I'll give the art director several different options of like, okay, this is what I think this is what you want me to draw. But I did this other thing, which I think is weird, but cool. And I think it could work. And sometimes they end up liking it. Sometimes they don't, but that's okay. I gave it a shot.
Yeah. and some of the children's book authors that you've worked with, is have you just clicked so well with one that you're like, hey, when's your next book? I'm really excited. Like, have you had like some really good experiences with the two of you just clicked really well, and that you were on the almost on the same page on how the books look at?
So I wish I could say that I have, but this is mostly because I don't think a lot of people know this, but illustrators don't have any contact with the author when they're working on a picture book. Yeah. So like the whole process is that, you know, like the author submits their manuscript to the publisher, and then the publisher on their own would choose an illustrator who's right for the project. I get a lot of authors coming to me being like, hey, can you illustrate my book? I'm like, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. The publisher chooses their own artist. Right. So yeah, the publisher chooses an artist. They get to work on it only talking to the art director and editor. And the reason, like, they try to keep the author and the illustrator separate, because author doesn't really know about art, you know, like, and illustrator doesn't really know about the writing part. And so they don't want to mingle those two parties together, because it could cause, you know, like a little bit of drama. So they just want to, they just separate it to keep it professional. So what usually happens is after I finish working on a book, sometimes I'll get in touch with the author, and then we'll be like, oh, it's great working with you. And then we might develop a friendship. Like, the Bilal Kuksal writer, Aisha Saeed, I'm pals with her now. It was great working with her, and I'd love to work with her again in the future. But while working on the book, I had no idea who she was.
Okay.
But because I'm working with the art directors, there have been art directors who I've had an amazing connection with, and ones that I would definitely love to work again with the future. Like, it just felt like everything was clicking, and that we were on the same page about everything. And then they also, for me personally, I'm the kind of person who just needs like so much validation for my work. Or like if I submit something, I'm like, is it okay? Please tell me. And some art directors will be like, yeah, it's fine, it's okay. And then like some people will be like, yeah, that's great, I love it, it's awesome. Thank you. I just need validation. And those are the ones that I really click with.
If you ever like looked at a children's book and you're like, ah, I wish that author would have called, like, I wish I would have illustrated that book for him instead. I knew I would have. Like, is there any?
There are a lot of books like that. But also, like, there are ones where, I mean, like, I have rejected books, but I have also been rejected myself, where like there have been a couple of, especially the summer of 2019 was a sad year for me, which was like, for some reason, there were three dream projects that I was contacted for being like, hey, we love your work. Can you like submit a test, you know, because like we were looking at a couple of different artists and we'd love to have you in the running. And so there were three of these, and I was in contest for all of them. And I was really cocky. I was like, I'm totally going to get all of them. I don't know how, like, I'm going to be struggling to manage all this work, but it's okay. I got this in the bag, and I got none of them. Absolutely none of them. And so, yeah, that was really rough.
We're just about out of time, Anusha. Yeah. This has been great. Where can people find, if they're interested in checking out your stuff or seeing any of your books, where would be the best place they could see you?
Yeah, sure. So for social media, I am at Foxville_art on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I don't know how to use TikTok, but I think it's important. So the teens are on there. Yeah. I'm AnushaSayed.com. That's my professional website. For my like current projects that I've got going on, I mean, like all of my books, some of them you can find at your local bookstore. Just, you know, type it up on that weird bookstore computer that they have, or go onto Amazon, search for Anusha Sayed. You'll find all my stuff there.
And also too, definitely check out your YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, just search Anusha Sayed. I'm on YouTube. I've got a bunch of videos just focusing on, like how to manage having an illustration career, things like pricing, finding work, agents, and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you very much, Anusha. This has been a pleasure. And I'll be excited to, you know, just keep following your work, and best of luck.
So, yeah, thank you so much for having me on. This was so much fun.
You're welcome.